Today and tomorrow mark the Mexican Day of the Dead celebration. We thought we would find out a little more about the holiday and how it's celebrated here in New York City. And with me now is renowned Mexican chef, restaurateur, and cookbook author, Zarela Martinez. Welcome back to the show.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
What are the origins of the Day of the Dead? Is this a fusion between the pre-Columbian religious practices and the Spanish ideas about...
Yeah, absolutely. Originally, it was held in Mexico in August because the ancient Mexicans believed that the ancestors could intercede with the gods to give them a good harvest. But then when the Spanish came, it just conveniently migrated down the calendar to All Souls and All Saints Day.
The same inspiration as we have for Halloween.
Exactly, but it's just a little bit different because we believe that the souls come back for a visit. Mm-hmm. And that we're going to honor them, and it's a joyful celebration.
Well, anyone who's visited Mexico has noticed those shops where they... not just shops, it's all over the place. You have these little tableaus in which skeletons are doing everyday chores, and there seems to be a real fascination with death.
Yes, well, because we're fatalists, you know. Instead of we have a totally different attitude about death than people do in the United States, because we know it's inevitable, so we may as well, you know, play with it.
And is Day of the Dead only a Mexican holiday?
No, you know, actually. I think they do it in Cambodia. You know, something very similar. They fill little boats and then they send them down.
Although that doesn't come out of Christian and pre-Columbian.
No, but things. You know, but I think a lot of, but I mean, it's celebrated in different ways everywhere.
And how do Mexicans, or well, first of all, Mexico is so many different regions. Can I say that Mexicans celebrate Day of the Dead in the same way, or would
Southern
each region
Mexican.
Have a different way of doing with it?
I think Southern Mexicans and Central Mexicans are the ones that really celebrate it with the altars and the singing at the graves. And because I grew up in the North, and we went and cleaned the graves and put flowers, but we didn't, you know, do all this until I moved to New York.
And then there are these foods that are associated with the holiday.
Oh yes, and this is a very, very typical thing. First of all, I guess it would be any you want to do the foods that the people that you are honoring loved. Like, and usually they love mole, which is a very big, you know, celebratory dish. Tamales, which are supposedly, somebody said to me, because they look like corpses, because it's the shroud and then the meat and then the sauce is the blood. And also another celebratory food. And since the Spanish, the bread, the bread for the dead that I brought you.
Now, bread is something most people don't associate with Mexico. They think of tortillas as being the bread of Mexico, but breads, some of the best bread I've ever had in my life I've had in Mexico. That's because the French
actually the Spanish brought it right away. You know, the first bread were the hosts. The communion hosts, and they built this particular ovens called calabaceros. You know, they're sort of round, and that was the first bread that they made.
Now, you brought some of these things with you, including the bread. This is almost the consistency of a jelly donut.
Yes, exactly.
But well, it doesn't taste like it?
Yeah.
It tastes kind of like bread and jelly donut combined.
Exactly.
Without the jelly.
Yes, exactly.
And has that been made in Mexico for hundreds of years now?
Yeah, well, for hundreds of years. And actually, I just sent my chef to Mexico City to learn how to make the bread because, you know, the bread, the Mexican bread here tastes so differently. So I sent him to one of my friends, Victor Nava, and he taught him how to make breads. So now he's very happy about that.
Now, you said because you came from northern Mexico, you weren't part of this tradition. You actually learned it in New York. Isn't that kind of ironic?
I learned it actually when I just went to Oaxaca. You know, when I experienced it there and I found my Mexican roots, my indigenous roots. And I thought, how lovely, you know, how lovely to honor your lost ones with mementos and their foods, and it was wonderful. When my mom passed away last year, I did the altar for her, and then when my cousin and my uncle passed away this year, I did it for them.
Would the altars in New York be very similar to the ones you'd see in Mexico?
Yes. Well, you know, yesterday I went to the Museo del Barrio to judge altars all over the city, community altars. And there were all sorts of different interpretations of them because some of them were Dominican and some of them were, you know, community gardens. And And it's beautiful that they have accepted the tradition and adapted it to the local traditions here.
And the Museo del Barrio is actually hosting a citywide celebration of the Day of the Dead, which people can find out more about on our website at WNYC.org. We have all sorts of links posted. We also have links posted to all sorts of information about you, Zarella.
Yeah, and I'm going to put a link up to you. You know, I just redid my entire website, and I have a bunch of how-to videos that are getting lots of attention.
And I have to congratulate you because you're celebrating something else, the 20th anniversary
of the restaurant
of your restaurant, Zarella's. When you opened that restaurant, I suspect that there were very few Mexicans in New York, at least to even hire to do the cooking. Now Mexicans have been flooding into New York City. What happened?
Well, I think, you know, there was the infrastructure. You know, people don't move in here until they have something that they can do. But I think that the Mexicans that have moved to New York have become incredibly successful entrepreneurs. You know, they started out working at the Korean delis, and now they own so many, you know, businesses in New Jersey and here in Brooklyn. It's fascinating.
When people talk about Halloween, do you see similarities with the way Halloween is celebrated here and the way Day of the Dead is celebrated in Mexico?
Well, you know, Halloween is kind of like a mean thing, I think, you know.
I mean, trick or treat.
Yeah, it's just... you know, the Day of the Dead is about celebration and honoring, and yes, and singing at the graves, and you know, it's just beautiful. I mean, yesterday when I was putting up the altar for my cousin who was killed in a car accident, I was so moved because I put up a golf ball because he liked to play golf, and you know, his favorite foods. It was just in a Stetson hat because he always wore a Stetson hat. So it's just a beautiful holiday.
And do you find that gringos respond well to this holiday?
Oh, yes. It's becoming as big as Cinco de Mayo. You know, it's you know, people here take it with great gusto, and because it's, you know, because it's so foreign, I guess.
Although it's been suggested that Cinco de Mayo is not as important a holiday in Mexico as it is in the United States, whereas the Day of the Dead is a major holiday in Mexico. You see altars all over. I've been in Mexico City during the celebrations, and they were just everywhere.
I know. In the central and southern parts, but not really so much in the north because we're more you know, sort of Americanized. But it's more of a religious holiday in the north, I think, I think it's more of a mixture in the central and in the southern parts.
Well, the pre-Columbian cultures really were very fascinated by death to the point where there were human sacrifices in some cases and a lot of bloodletting and things like that. We don't see any of that anymore, but are you interested in how it's all trickled into this modern fusion culture?
I am because, you know, as you know, I do a lot of consulting on the Mexican market. And what I've discovered is that second and third generation Mexicans are really retaking and rescatando all their traditions. And it's a beautiful thing to do. You know, yesterday when I was looking at the altars, one of the winning altars, was about from the mariachi school that all the little kids put together. And all the kids are, you know, 10 and 12 years old and playing mariachi. So they're retaking their traditions, and it's such a strong culture that it makes me feel so unbelievably happy.
Is this something that's more likely to happen in New York because of the people who have come from Mexico to New York than in the Southwest?
No, it happens all over now. It happens, and you see, you know, like Mexican folkloric dances, groups are all over. You know, I actually have a pattern, you know, for Mexican folkloric dances. Dance dresses, and you know, it's everywhere. You know, people are very interested in our culture.
Now, you mentioned that one of the things here is in a mole. Most people think of mole as a chocolate sauce, but there are dozens of different moles in Mexico,
yeah.
Aren't there?
I mean, well, they used to think of mole as the chocolate sauce. You have no idea how sophisticated the clients have become. You know, I have, you know, as you know, I specialize in regional Mexican food. I do not do fusion Mexican. I do traditional regional Mexican food. And when I do the 7 moles of Oaxaca, which they're really much more, we get packed.
But Oaxaca calls itself the land of the seven moles.
And, you know, some have fruit, vegetables, all vegetables and herbs. Some have chocolate. You know, some have fruit, like the tablecloth stainer. You know, they're an infinite variety, and everybody has their own recipe.
The tablecloth stainer is a mole that if you get it on your clothes, you're never going to get it out.
It depends on who washes it.
But I even once had a mole that was made of burnt tortillas.
Well, you know why?
A mole negro.
You know why? Because supposedly the ancient Mexicans, you would use the burnt carbon of the tortillas to counteract any hyperacidity. You know how there are a lot of carbon pills for hyperacidity?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really interesting how they work with that.
Well, the ancient Mexicans discovered all sorts of interesting things, that if you mix corn with lime, you add to its nutritional value.
Well, what you do is, actually, you know, the other day I had a tamal called a sacahuil, a very big tamal. It's from Veracruz. And we did it the old way with ashes, you know, instead of using the calcium hydroxide. And it had a totally different flavor. So what you do is you soak it and then you rub it and it removes the outer coating. So when you mix it with beans, it becomes a perfect protein. And when you add the chili and tomatoes, you have the vitamin A and C, so you have a perfect diet.
Well, the pre-Columbian diet was largely vegetarian because there wasn't a heck of a lot of wildlife. Much of it had been hunted into extinction.
Yeah, well, I guess they had like venison and ducks, but a lot of insects. Mm-hmm. You know, you've eaten my worm sauce. You know, the people eat it. I said, did you try the worm sauce? And the guy said, worms? I said, yeah. In the sauces. I thought you were saying worm and you couldn't pronounce it.
Well, worms are a perfect source of protein, aren't they?
Exactly.
And they hardly taste except what you cook them in.
Yeah. They have their taste. They taste smoky. But you can even find live ones in Queens sometimes. You can't find Mexican corn, but you can find live maguey worms.
There also are different attitudes about things like the thing that Americans call corn smut that Mexicans consider one of the great delicacies.
Well, that too is changing. You know, that too. Now, you know, in Mexico, it's spontaneous. When you have a lot of rain, it just happens. You know, but in Iowa and in...
It's kind of a fungus that grows on
fungus.
The corn.
In Iowa, and I think the first guy to do it was in Florida, Glenn Burns. He injects every single ear of corn with a fungus, and now we have unlimited with lacoche. I mean, not cheap, but we have it available all the time.
Well, there was a time when American farmers would see that fungus and say, oh, I have to throw this thing away.
Yeah.
And now, like the Mexicans, they're saying, I make more money with this corn.
Well, it's a truffle, and it's an aphrodisiac.
Well, I've had it. It's never worked that way with me, but maybe I have to eat more. Zarella, thank you so much for being with us. Zarella Martinez, whose restaurant Zarella on 2nd Avenue is one of New York's great treasures. 20 years.
20 years now.
1st Avenue.
2nd Avenue.
2nd Avenue.
I just have to say one last thing. You know, one of my friends said to me, how do you get them to give you the recipes? Because I do a lot of research. And he said, and I said, I asked them to tell me their stories.
You can't tell it now. We've run out of time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
On tomorrow's show, Garry Kasparov talks chess and Russian politics. Then Theodore Mann, who led the Circle in the Square Theater for almost 6 decades. Rosalie Goldberg on producing 100 different performances in 25 places around the city over 3 weeks. Plus, Please Explain is all about Sharia, Islamic law. By the way, if you've missed something on the show or just want to hear something again, you can listen to archives of past programs on WNYC.org. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English and Blake Neshek. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. And we had help today from Fran Jacobs, Tanya Wiedeking, Rory Bernstein, and Jennifer Keeney-Sendro. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.